It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC. Many people decry the business-as-usual atmosphere of Washington, D.C., but a lot of that business goes overlooked, if not unseen. Mike Lofgren is a 28-year veteran of Capitol Hill, including a significant amount of time as a senior analyst on the House and Senate budget committees. He says that the legislative process of the U.S. government may very well be broken, but the real power in Washington operates outside of that process, and that ever-growing bureaucracies, multi-billion-dollar corporate interests, and the desires of Wall Street come together for a consensus of government operations that don't get debated on Capitol Hill. He writes about that in his new book. It's called The Deep State. And we welcome Mike Lofgren to the show. Mike, thanks for being with us today.
Good to be here.
There's a lot of criticism in the media about how our government is broken because nothing seems to be getting done. But what you delve into in your book is the element of Washington and the establishment there that does get things done. You use an example of the gigantic $1.7 billion NSA facility that was built during one of the times when the government was near shutdown.
It's strange that during times of government shutdown, we can't get federal aviation inspections or food safety inspections, this kind of thing, but we can somehow scrape together $1 billion to invade Libya and overthrow Muammar Gaddafi, which didn't seem to help us much, but somehow we managed to do it. And that tells me that we have kind of a parallel government. On the one hand, the things that people think they're getting and they vote for, like repairing roads and bridges and public services, they will automatically shut down, but somehow these other things go on. And that's what tells there is a kind of shadow government that operates in season and out and with remarkable continuity, despite people's partisan squabbling about this or that.
Well, when terms like shadow government get used, a lot of people immediately dismiss it as something of kind of a conspiracy theory mindset. But what you call the deep state is actually where a lot of the decision making seems to be happening on things like massive amounts of military spending or security spending and even Wall Street regulation.
Well, yeah, that's right. And it's not a conspiracy. It's stuff that happens in the light of day. It's people you know. It's just they're always there. They operate according to certain incentives, and that main incentive is money. When you think about it, World War II, the greatest cataclysm of the 20th century, for the United States, from Pearl Harbor to VJ Day, it was about 3 years and 9 months. The war on terrorism has ground on for 14 years, and we've spent unprecedented amounts of money on the war on terror. It's something like $4 trillion extra since 9/11. And that money trickles down, and it creates incentives for people. And if the war on terrorism ended tomorrow, there'd be a lot of S-Class Mercedes sedans. There would be a lot of McMansions around the Beltway in Washington that would get repossessed or foreclosed on. And that's the kind of thing that skews incentives.
Yeah, the governing class doesn't really operate against its best interests. And continued employment is a strong motivator for just about everybody, but especially for military contractors and Wall Street, and of course, for government employees. When you use the term deep state, what are the component parts and who are the people you're really talking about?
Well, it's mainly the national security functions of government, not just DOD and Homeland Security, State Department, and so forth, but also you've got the so-called FISA courts, those secret judicial tribunals that handle espionage and terrorism cases. The thing is, in theory, they might be under some sort of oversight of Congress, but most congressmen don't really know that much about them. As for Congress itself, it's only the leadership and a few select people on the Defense and Intelligence Committees who know all that much, and they're pretty much sworn to secrecy. So you've got that component. You've got Wall Street. And when you think of all the people who come to and from Wall Street and end up running the Treasury Department, like Hank Paulson under George Bush, Tim Geithner under Obama, there really hasn't been that much change. It's a big revolving door. You've got Silicon Valley, which has so much money. They even have now more money than Wall Street. And, of course, they're saying, oh, well, we didn't have anything to do with all this surveillance. But for years and years, they've gotten seed money from the NSA or the CIA for startup companies, and they've cooperated. So it's all sort of a big closed loop. As the late George Carlin would say, it's a club and you ain't in it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the types of things that happen from the basis of this club, the deep state, that maybe are elements of misdirection when it comes to who's to blame on making some of these decisions. Many Republicans are decrying President Obama's level of executive power, just as Democrats did of President Bush. And they say that he's doing things from one branch of government that really should be going through the legislative process, and that goes against the Constitution. How does that come into play when it comes to how the level of deep state governance operates?
Well, it appears that the executive branch is pretty dominant, particularly on national security matters, and has been for some time. But in many respects, that's because Congress itself has abdicated. It's no longer on the playing field voluntarily. They're saying, oh, you're a monster for doing this, that, or the other on gun control or climate change or whatever. But as I read the Constitution, they're the ones who are supposed to declare war or authorize it. And the Obama administration has actually put a draft forward to say, here, why don't you vote on an authorization for use of force on ISIS? It's been over a year, and Congress has done nothing because they do not want to take a decision that might become unpopular in the future. So in many respects, this is almost a kind of cooperation. They claim that he's doing X, Y, and Z, but they're happy to let him do it. Who's pulling his strings as well? It's very interesting that there's this remarkable continuity in government in certain national security fields. His first Secretary of Defense was Bob Gates, who served for Bush. His CIA director is John Brennan, who served under Bush, and so forth.
The president can't just do anything he does want. When he tries to get things done, there is pushback from Congress and maybe from these other forces that are not as visible. The president campaigned on a promise to close Guantanamo Bay, and he's tried to close it, but 7 years later, it's still open. Why do things like that not move forward?
Yeah, well, it's funny how that works. And he also campaigned rather vigorously against the so-called FISA Amendments Act in 2008, which would retroactively legalize the telecom's illegal cooperation with the NSA on illegal spying. And he claimed as a candidate he was going to filibuster it. And then all of a sudden in July of 2008, he turned around and voted for it. What changed his mind? I don't know. I do know that John Brennan, who was in the private sector then, suddenly became one of his advisors and started counseling him on these things. Is it a case of Obama growing as a statesman, or is it him being influenced by these forces? I mean, you can decide for yourself, but somehow there's a change between what a candidate says and how he actually governs.
Well, it does seem that a lot of that change happens once candidates start to become privy to information that is just not available outside of this network that you call the deep state when it deals with intelligence information. And something that you claim is that a lot of this intelligence information is sort of groomed for the president or for some of the decision makers that hadn't previously been part of this establishment.
Well, yeah, as one NSA insider, an ex-NSA person told me, the president, and he doesn't mean Obama in particular, he means any president, is literally a captive of the people who feed intelligence to him. And you better believe the stuff they feed him is the type of things that make one's hair stand on end, and it is almost deliberately sculpted in that fashion to sort of narrow options, to say you can do X, Y, or Z, and one of those is the Goldilocks solution that they want done.
Well, people have a sense of a lack of connection between the Beltway industrial complex that exists, and that's why outsider candidates energize people, no matter what your political leaning might be. But those outsider candidates run against that Washington system. Whether it would be Trump on the far right or Bernie Sanders on the far left, what are the chances that either of those candidates would actually be able to upset the status quo and the groupthink that exists within the permanent continuity of decision makers in that Beltway consensus? If they were to be elected, what could they do?
Well, I'm a little surprised over the last 3 to 6 months at just how much of a jump ball it is that people of totally opposite viewpoint but similar stance in terms of being outsiders, like Trump and Sanders, how much traction they've gotten. And I'm not willing to make any bets at this moment about what kind of traction they will continue to have, because Bernie Sanders has stayed competitive in terms of fundraising with Hillary Clinton, and his average contribution is like $33. He's obviously energized people. Trump attracts people on the right because, hey, he's self-financing. He doesn't have to listen to the normal contributors. Probably what we're seeing is a delayed effect from the 2008 economic meltdown. It really affected people a lot, and there's been a little bit of a delay, but I think basically the effect is being felt now of people's lives being turned upside down, people foreclosed on, and so forth, and people have just had it with the status quo.
If an outsider were to make it to the presidency, could that outsider then put any real pressure on some of these elements of government, these giant bureaucracies, the level of Wall Street influence, and the controlling bodies which regulate them?
That is the number one question. Obama was going to withdraw from Iraq and sort of liquidate the Afghanistan mission. And it looks to me now, in retrospect, in 2009, Gates, Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State, and General Petraeus kind of put a squeeze play on him. They gave him options that only involved escalation. Then they started leaking to the media and leaking to Congress and testifying before Congress and trying to push his policy and foreclose other options. And they put him in a position where he really didn't want to be. And it remains to be seen, if we have a President Sanders or a President Trump, what sort of pressure the bureaucracy, that sort of the permanent state, can put on these people in terms of their agenda.
We've been talking to Mike Lofgren. His new book is called The Deep State. Mike, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Enjoyed being here.
Thank you. It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC.